The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
You are safe now, but your world faces terrible danger. Please heed that warning, too.
When archaeologist and TV personality Anya Creed encounters paranormal activity during a dig in New Mexico, she happens upon a metaphysical revelation that could change the world.
Is something happening at one of the casinos?
Oh no, they're pilgrims and paranormal investigators. They're here about the Santo Niño.
Santo Niño?
It means holy child.
Who or what is this holy child?
A young man appears by the side of the road with his thumb out. Although he's long-haired and bearded, and maybe a bit scruffy in appearance, a kindly motorist stops and picks him up. The young man is very polite and very friendly, and then his manner turns grave. He warns of some impending disaster, usually global in scale. The Santo Niño may have engendered the vanishing hitchhiker.
But there are those that see Anya as a threat and desire the secret that she alone possesses.
So you have done me the honor of taking my warning seriously, Eminence.
Just so. I myself spoke to God's Hound before he left on this mission of his. But I personally took Father Godard aside and charged him to recover this relic.
A very good day to you, Miss Anya Creed. And remember to look behind you.
Why would anybody want to kill me?
Mind if I join you?
Please do. I'm Anya.
Robert Godin. Father Robert Godin.
How is it that you happened by at such an opportune moment?
I was following you, of course.
Why?
Because I fear you have something that does not belong to you.
The sword?
They took him.
Who's they?
They are whoever comes in the night to capture beings like the Santo Niño.
Rogue Angel Number 4. The Chosen.
And now we seem to find ourselves at a New Mexican standoff.
So you need to ask yourself just one question, Padre. Do I feel lucky?
Available now from Graphic Audio.
How are the chocolate-covered ants, Arnold?
Scrum says Heza. I can hardly taste the ants.
And what are these, Perry?
That? Ooh, let me see. I think it's Japanese beetle, Cajun style.
Ooh, I love Japanese food.
How does it taste?
Crunchy.
We pulled it off. Admit it.
Okay, we pulled it off. Let's see if it lasts.
Are you kidding me? Insects are forever. They'll outlive us all.
What is that?
Tomorrow's prophets exercising. Whew, what's this?
Did someone order bees?
Nobody ordered bees. Open it up and see what's inside. What the hell is making it buzz like that?
It sounds like a bees. Bees.
I know it sounds like bees, but it's empty.
What? Bed.
Let's get the hell out of here!
I'm with you! Sacre Dieu! I am undone!
The victim would appear to have ingested toxic levels of bee venom during the last meal. They died of anaphylactic shock, a condition normally the result of allergic reaction to bee toxin or from massive bee stings.
Then why did the patrons also succumb?
Perhaps they didn't eat the same foods.
Were traces of bees found in the victim's stomachs?
I'm no entomologist, but the stomachs of the three victims were packed with insect materials, including antennae, carapaces, legs, and other such matter. Digestion had begun, and bees lack the horny outer bodies of other insects on the menu.
Bees usually die after they sting. Why were no bees found in the premises?
I can only conclude that the victims ingested every morsel of the bee delicacy that unfortunately fell them.
Destroyer 107. It's buzzing with excitement. Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands, narrated by Richard Rowan, with performances by Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King-Williams, Nanette Savard, M.B. Van Dorn, Kate Torrey, Dylan Lynch, Ken Jackson, Michael Glenn, Barbara Pinellini, and Mort Shelby. Deathlands number 24, Traitor Redux. The day was bitterly cold, with a dazzling sun hanging at the center of an untouched blue sky. From east to west and north to south, there wasn't even the hint of a cloud. All around, it seemed that you could reach out and touch the perfection of the snow-covered mountains. The cold air had the unmistakable scent of salt from the Pacific Ocean only a few miles away, beyond the ruins of old Seattle. Here and there, it was possible to make out the thin tendrils of cooking fires among the stumps of nuked city buildings. But whatever ate there, ate alone. The oppressive wet weather of the past 3 days had vanished, and it had snowed during the previous night as the temperature dropped well below freezing. Ryan and JB had found no cover, waking up to find their sleeping bags were crusted with frozen snow.
Last day of the last week.
Ryan stooped, trying to get a fire going to warm them up, dry their clothes, and heat some oatmeal. JB checked that the cold hadn't affected any of his blasters.
Now we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
They had decided that the best place to begin the final stage of their search would be to pick a high spot with a view over Seattle from the east. There was a particular hill that suited their purpose, and they had been working their way toward it, occasionally slipping on the icy trail. Apart from the scattered fires among the ruins, there didn't seem to be a living soul within 50 miles of them. There had been a pair of white-pelted hares gambling in a clearing among the pines as they climbed higher, who totally ignored them. In a valley to their right, they spotted a small herd of deer picking its way delicately through the frosted grass. JB had nudged Ryan and pointed to the star on his shoulder, but he'd shaken his head.
Bullet on a still cold morning like this might be here 20 miles off. Could attract Abe and the trader, if they're anywhere near. But it could also attract someone else.
It was hard work, and both men were panting as they neared the crest of the small mountain.
You can make out the sea from here.
Look at the Cascades back yonder.
A few more paces brought them to the top, giving them the ultimate view all the way around. Now they could see the far side of the slope, bisected by a narrow hunting path. Two figures about 100 yards below them struggled upward through the deeper snow. The smaller man was sliding and falling, a little way to the rear. The leader, using the butt of what looked like an old Armalite rifle to help himself, was gray-haired, tall, and erect. He spotted the pair on the ridge above him immediately and stopped for a single heartbeat. Then he lifted his gun above his head in an unmistakable gesture.
There they are.
As soon as he spotted J.B. Dix and Ryan Cotter on the top of the hill, Trader turned to call to Abe, then started to run toward them, his long legs ranging through the powdery snow. J.B. slung his Uzi across his back, out of the way.
How old do you reckon he is?
No idea. I always figured that he never had a real childhood, teethed on an implode grin. I never heard him say much about his early past. You?
JB shook his head.
Never. Lots of rumors, but nothing to support them.
Trader was closing fast, his breath pluming from his open mouth. At his back,